from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is The Good Atheist.
Welcome to the GoodAtheist.net bonus podcast. My name is Jacob Fortan.
I'm Ryan Harkness.
Today is a very special day on February 12th. Do you know what day it is today?
It's not Valentine's Day?
No, it's not. It has nothing to do with that makeshift commercial piece of shit holiday.
What are you talking about? St. Valentine is blah, 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 and blah. I saw some...
It's a pathetic excuse to just sell, you know, gift cards and stuff.
I'm pretty sure Spanish people think it's a big deal. Remember that episode of 30 Rock where... what's his name's hot Spanish girlfriend? The main,
Selma Hayek?
Yeah, exactly. Was it Selma Hayek? Yeah, where Selma Hayek made them go to church on St. Valentine's Day?
I don't know anything about that. No, forget any... It has nothing to do with saints or any of that bullshit. Today is the 200th birthday of Charles Darwin.
But that's a lot less interesting than St. Valentine's
Day. It's Darwin Day, man! Darwin Day!
Oh, it's Darwin's what?
200th birthday. Now, I know he's dead, but 200 years ago today was when he was born. And
when Darwin was born.
And since 1995, we've actually started celebrating this day. And it's not just about celebrating the fact that Darwin was born. It's also kind of an excuse for us to celebrate the achievements of science. Science! And actually, if you go to the site, there's a post talking about Darwin's Day. And there's actually a link that talks about all the events that are going on today all over the world.
There's stuff happening.
There's plenty of stuff happening.
Is there anything happening here in Montreal?
No.
Ah.
Nothing in Montreal, but there's plenty of stuff that's happening in Ontario. We don't live there. But McMaster University has a Darwin Day barbecue thing or whatever. And anyways, it's got to be a cold day for a barbecue. But that's not the point. The point is that, it's kind of like a celebration of science. I think it's kind of cool, you know, considering the fact that still around the world, Darwin is kind of looked upon with a certain amount of, what's what I'm looking for here? Reservation, maybe, on the conservative side?
Controversy would probably be controversy is a good word. I mean, I don't think anybody literally hates Darwin. They might hate the ideas that he has, but most of them probably have no idea what Darwin was like, actually read any of his work, any of the other things that he used to research before that whole evolution thing fell out of his brain.
Well, you know what's funny is that even before he published The Origin of Species, that Darwin was already had published a bestseller on his adventures aboard the Beagle. So he was already well-respected by that time.
Mm-hmm.
His book blew everybody's mind.
I can imagine. Like an extra... If it was a century or two earlier, they probably would have stoned him. Or burnt him, set him aflame.
Yeah, probably. Now, before we continue, last show, we promised that we were going to talk about Tim Tebow's Super Bowl commercial. We didn't have enough time for it. It was a 51-minute long show, man.
Mm-hmm.
So we cut it short, decided that we were going to just do it on the bonus show only for you paying people because you rock and you deserve what we promise. So let's talk about the ad. Now, I don't know if any of you actually watched the Super Bowl. Concerning the fact that there are fans, patrons all over the world, I don't think it's more than half of the people who listen or paid for the podcast that really give a shit about
football. But they are aware of the concept of a Super Bowl of football that occurs that in America that people pay attention to and that advertising is a big part of it.
Right, but let's also recall that Europeans find the term football rather insulting because that's what they call their sport.
Oh, no.
Like,
it has the same name. Oh.
But you know what? I think it is kind of stupid. You barely use your foot in football, in American football. Like, why don't they just call it pig ball or something?
No. I believe they wanted everybody to call it hand egg because it's... You know, you have football. Yeah, no, it's like a widespread thing where they joke around and they say that they have football and we have hand egg because it's basically you use your hands to carry an egg-shaped thing around.
So do you think you can throw an egg like a football?
If you threw it pointy side forward, it might have a little bit of aerodynamics.
I all of a sudden like have one of those weird experiments that I'm going to conduct in my head. I want to just throw eggs to see if they're... spin like footballs. And I'll do it at somebody's house that I don't like, you know.
Yeah, but Who do we not like?
We don't like the government. Let's take the government.
I like the government.
No, you don't really like the government.
Okay.
These are the same people that are constantly like getting us to try to give them money even though we don't have any. It's horrible.
Oh, yeah. Paying taxes sucks.
Paying taxes really does suck. Mm. Well, paying taxes when you're super poor. Come on now. Like, they're still trying to get $700 from me because they said that in 2004, I made a mistake on my taxes. And apparently, it's not like you can go back and say, hey, no, I didn't. They're just like, you did. Give us money. I'm like, why don't you bother somebody who's rich and he can have one less ivory back scratcher or something, fuckers. Anyways.
Okay, so you hate the government. You can throw eggs.
I don't hate them. Like I'm gonna grab my gun and I'm gonna gun them down.
No, no,
but I would certainly feel very satisfied if I egged one of their buildings. Yeah, that would feel kind of good, actually.
Okay.
And if I threw them like footballs, it would be super.
You could see how that works out.
Exactly.
Okay.
Okay. Let's talk Tim Tebow ad before we get too silly.
Sure.
Now, what did you think of the ad? I don't know if everybody saw. We'll put a link to it on the site. So if you haven't seen it, go to the site before you continue to press play.
Okay, at first I didn't even realize because, you know, I had this idea of how this commercial was going to look and how Tim Tebow's mom was going to look. And she was on the commercial and she looked kind of creepy. It's like she looked all, and I'm not going to say plastic surgery'd up, but it's just they dolled her up really good to try and make her look, I don't know.
Well, it is high def, so you got to really doll people up quite a bit because high definition is not your friend when you don't have like crazy super smooth skin.
Yeah, but yeah, she looked like. Some guest star on Desperate Housewives is the best way I can describe her. So she's there, and she just talks about, oh, being the mom of a football star is really hard and blah, blah, blah. And then Tim Tebow jumps out of nowhere and tackles her because I guess that's funny. And
it was actually a pretty hard tackle.
Yeah, yeah, that's the whole...
kind of painful.
And then they say, go visit focusonthefamily.org or whatever it is.
To hear more of the story.
To hear more. So it was really, I actually, when I first heard about this, they were saying that there's no way Focus on the Family is going to be allowed to say anything actually controversial, so it's really going to be a non-issue, and it really was. I kind of feel like we got atheist bus added in that everybody freaked out and talked about it more than it deserved to be talked about, and if we just ignored it, no one would have even known what the fuck was going on.
Well, the question is obviously, like, if we would have ignored it, would they have had, would have there been a different treatment for the commercial? You know, or is this the original one that CBS approved? And we don't know. We were not there.
Yeah, that's a good question. Definitely a good question.
I think definitely the kind of focus on it probably did manage to change it a little bit. Although it wasn't even necessary because there was so much interest and so much, I don't know, like, news time covering the story that nobody needs to go to Focus on the Family to find out what the story is. Yeah, we all know what the story is.
And that's what I mean. To a degree, they kind of won just based off all of the media attention that they got. Now, you were saying that they kind of didn't because that ad cost them how much money?
I don't know, $2.5 million or something?
Yeah.
I mean, they're not made of money. So apparently they had to sack a bunch of people from the organization in order to pay for it. So technically the organization just got a bit smaller.
Victory!
Oh, well, they could say the same thing about the atheist bus ad, saying like, well, here are a bunch of atheists with less money.
But yeah, I know, that doesn't work. But wasn't that just a whole bunch of people just donating money to it, and that's how we did it?
Well, yeah, that's the funny thing about the atheist bus ad is that there were people that donated to it, obviously, anonymously, because there are some rich atheists out there who don't want others to know that they don't believe, because I have to imagine there's a really good reason for that, you know? You don't really come out of the closet sometimes when you're rich because you may no longer be rich. You may lose all your customers. It's like if the head of Doritos was found to be an atheist, say goodbye to Dorito. Nobody would buy those chips anymore.
Mr. Dorito, you godless man, the board of directors has voted you out.
Maybe godless people eat Doritos. We don't want to know.
Hand back over your Illuminati ring.
So, yeah, I guess it was... I was a little bit disappointed. I was hoping for something a little bit more...
like Tim Tebow spiking in a... oh, wait, no, that would be a pro-abortion ad would be him spiking a fetus.
This is disgusting. What's wrong with you?
Well, I don't know. He tackled his mom, so I'm trying to think how it would kind of play out if it was... like, what were you imagining it was going to be all about?
I just thought it would be her talking about saying, like, oh, it's... it was a difficult choice, but I made the right one. Make sure to make the right choice. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, just yesterday I put up a post about these billboards that went up saying that black babies were an endangered species. So abortion groups are playing the race card, basically trying to suggest that because African Americans have higher percentage of, like, they get more abortions than their paler skin counterparts, that this is some kind of white conspiracy to get rid of all black babies.
And the ironic thing is these pro-lifers are usually the ones that hate black people. Wow, that's horrible.
It is a little bit, yeah. So, I mean, look, they're willing to sink down to some tremendous lows. I was actually really surprised by how much of a non-starter this whole thing really was. I mean, I don't know how many people checked out the site after, and now that it's gone, nobody's talking about it because nobody cares.
Yeah.
So maybe they should have been a bit ballsier with it, you know, because the momentum's gone. It's like nobody gives a shit anymore about the whole Tim Tebow story, and that's really what the big news about it is that who cares? Who fucking cares?
Yeah, it came, it happened, and It ended, and that was it.
I just don't like the fact, though, that maybe this opens the door for more of this nonsense, you know, for in the future for other Super Bowl ads. I mean, who knows? You crack open the door, and what else are you letting in? You know, it's like a Pandora's box of fucking bullshit.
Here's what I think. Well, I don't know how CBS could have thought that wasn't going to be controversial, but maybe the idea is they agreed to it before they realized what a shitstorm it would cause, which is hard to believe, but hey, maybe. So next year they'll try to avoid all of it, or maybe they did it specifically to drive some controversy.
I think they did, because you know what? Considering the fact that they were worried that they couldn't sell all the ad space, and this news comes out and all of a sudden, boom, all the ad space does get filled. I mean, they did what they were supposed to do. They got all ads sold.
And let's face it, these are corporations. If they need more money, then they will do these things. It's like they don't give a shit. It's like, oh, it's an anti-abortion ad? Give us $2.5 million. I'll read an anti-abortion ad for $2.5 million, and then I'll invest some of it back into the pro-abortion movement, but hey.
I like the way you think, sir. Yeah, let's find somebody who's going to pay us that money to just read that. That would be kind of sweet.
I don't care. I'm willing to be more sneaky than moral.
Okay, today on the show, we're going to talk a little bit about women subjugating themselves to men according to the Bible. And what's the other subject that we talk about? How Canada is going to basically have no Anglicans left?
Yeah, it's post Canada. Canada is apparently quote unquote post Christian.
I like that term. But yeah. First, let's talk about this one post I put up, which was about Reverend Angus MacLay, who's basically a member of the General Synod of the Church of England. That's the Church Assembly of the Church of England, and he's basically trying to fight over there, because the Church of England is a softy organization, and they're starting to, support homosexual marriage and all this other kind of stuff, and even women priests. So, like, there are some Anglican churches that have women priests, and he hates this.
Mm-hmm.
So he sent out a pamphlet, and he recently had a sermon that was calling on women to be submissive to their husbands. Let me read you one of the quote that he had. It would seem that women should remain silent if their questions could legitimately be answered by their husbands at home. This is just one of the things that he basically said. But he was just taken from the Bible saying, listen, the Bible is very specific. Women are supposed to be submissive. They're, you know, second class citizens. You need to shut the fuck up is basically what he's talking about. Now, the thing I found really hilarious about this whole story was that some of his parishioners, well, the female ones, were aghast that he could say such things. One of them said, well, what is this gobbledygook that the church is saying? This is ridiculous. This is the 21st century. How dare anyone talk like this? And this got me to thinking, what exactly do these people think is in the Bible? Now, I know that most Christians are not exactly the most studious bunch, but you have to believe that the good reverend here was really taking from the very holy scripture that you think is the infallible word of God. Now, there are over 200 references in the Bible to why women are second-class citizens. And why
women generally suck.
Why they suck. I mean, we will begin with the most and first, you know, the most obvious one, which is basically that church leaders have blamed women for everything. Mostly because of Eve, who tempted man and led to our fall from grace.
Yeah, it was. We've talked about this before. God created the universe. Story number one. Story number two. Women are untrustful. They're bitches. Watch out for them women.
It's your best joke so far. So I'm always glad when you bring it back.
Yeah.
Now, if anybody doubts that this is true, I invite you to read the Bible. I actually find that it was quite funny that, that one of the women was quoted as saying, "Well, this is the 21st century. How dare they talk like this?" I'm like, "Hey, bitch, your fucking manual is written 5,000 years ago. What do you think it's going to say? Do you think it's going to say that we should be progressive? Do you think that it should say that women should have equal rights to
women,
men?
Female carpenters should make the same as Jesus?
I mean, even Jesus treated his mother like a fucking piece of shit. He even discouraged people from having children and stuff. Because, of course, he was like, well, you're all coming up to heaven with me when I die. I'm going to come back, and you're all coming with me, and you're going to get to live in mansions. Yeah, we're still waiting for that one. 2,000 years later, he's a no-show. He's a freaking no-show. Yeah. But here's a couple great quotes that I thought we'd read. One of them is from Martin Luther. And here's what he said, the guy who nailed the Protestant Reformation on that church wall. Here's what he says. If a woman grows weary and at last dies from childbearing, it matters not. Let her die from bearing. She is there to do it.
That's a great man right there.
Yep. Tertullian wrote, each of you women is an Eve. You are the gate of hell. You are the temptress of the forbidden tree. You are the first deserter of the divine law.
But there are only two. So it's like first.
You know, I think it's funny.
Adam was second.
Yeah, well, you know, he could have said no, but he didn't say no, did he?
Well, it's because of that temptress of the forbidden tree. I mean, it's very understandable.
Well, the Abrahamic religions really regard women as being evil temptress. Let's not fool ourselves. You know, I mean, the same reason why in the Middle East they force women to wear the burqa is just basically because they regard them as dangerously sinful, that men cannot control themselves around women, and therefore women command too much power. I mean, the witch trials during the from the 15th century to the 18th century. I mean, they executed between 40 to 100,000 women, exclusively women that they tortured and killed and accused of being witches. And that's just basically because they felt that women had more sorcery powers because they were in a closer connection with the devil. You know, because they command all of these sinful powers, the powers of lust, you know, of envy, all of these things, driving men crazy. But if you actually think about it, I mean, there's really much more of an economic reason why women were persecuted so much in those days. Because let's take the Salem witch trials as a perfect example, right? In the 17th century, United States, a bunch of women get accused, I think it was something like 37, or it's pretty high up there. Anyways, the reason is almost entirely because of land. You see, at the time, growing families was, you know, like, had it so that basically farms were no longer able to be profitable, and people were trying to expand. But unfortunately, you know, when your population reaches a certain size, all the land is already delineated. What are you supposed to do? Well, it turns out that a lot of these women, almost every single woman that was accused of witchcraft, had one thing in common, is that they were usually widowed and they were landowners. And the whole thing was, if you accused a woman of being a witch and she was found guilty, you and the church would split her assets.
You know, it's funny. I believe a lot of drug laws in the States are kind of similar like that.
That's true.
It's like if you catch somebody for a drug offense, you take their shit.
Well, the government takes their shit, though. You don't get to have half
the
stuff.
Yeah, I know, but what? So that means that you don't have people snitching out other people. I'm pretty. You just have the police having a incentive to rape you and take all your stuff, which is great.
That's a completely different story.
It is. I just wanted to kind of stick that in there.
But, you know, religion has always been, in Christianity, most particularly, at least in this, in the West, because that's the religion of choice, has been really, really reticent towards accepting any rights for women. I mean, they were even against anesthesia for women in labor because women are supposed to suffer. because of the original sin. So they didn't want women to, you know, have anesthetics during childbirth.
Well, right now, I mean, the Pope, we talked about this an episode or two ago, how the Pope is fighting the equity law in the UK. And sure, this time it's because of the gays, but trust me, before it was because of the women.
Yeah, women voting. It's like, you can't let women vote. They should be silent. They should be subservient. You can't give them rights. You can't let them make choices and decisions. They're our property. I mean, how long have women been property of men? I mean, for the most of the history of the civilized world, women were the property of men. And they were fine with that. They were happy with that. It was like, it was a good arrangement for guys, not so much of a great arrangement for women. And I find it almost ironic that women are traditionally more religious than men. I'm like, these are the same religious institutions that keeps them subservient.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if anything, they should be the ones rebelling against it. I mean, the Bible is a misogynistic article of faith. It really is. I mean, 200 misogynist passages, that's a lot.
I'm sure that's being pretty conservative.
Well, I mean, you're right. It could be. I mean, these are just the numbers that I've been told. I haven't scrutinized the thing as heavily as I would have wanted to. I mean, it is actually, the Bible is quite long. It's like 1,000 pages and more. It's just, and it's the most boring read in the world.
Well, you just skip all that big gat, big got, big goot stuff.
Yeah, I have one of those great little readers that when you want to try to find specific passages, it'll find it for you because, yeah.
Or you can just read one of those illustrated My Favorite Bible Stories ones, which usually has the fun stuff like Solomon and his hair and the lions and... It's great.
Those are the problem with those ones is that they're really the kind of kiddie versions that ignore all the other passages. Like I love this one in Ecclesians, which talks about women lusting after Egyptian men who have dicks the size of donkeys and emanations they jack like fucking horses or whatever. This is the specifically said like that.
Man,
it's pretty damn disgusting. What can you do? But yeah, I thought I felt when I read that it was a perfect indication of how shocked people are when pastors and reverends take the Bible literally and then preach it as it's supposed to be understood, of saying, well, listen, Timothy and Corinthians say quite specifically that women are not to talk, that they're supposed to, you know, not only respect but also submit to their husbands and their husbands' sexual whims as well. I mean, it deals with this as well. Like, if you don't want to have sex but your husband wants to have sex, too fucking bad for you. He's allowed to relieve himself at any time. That's his marital rights.
And just, you don't even have to look further than right now how there's a big split going on between whether or not women should be allowed to be priests. I mean, doesn't that just tell you how second-class religion treats women?
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, and there are women that are opposed to this as well. It's not just, you know, men that are saying this. There's plenty of women that feel that women don't belong as a priest class. They're like, well, they can't be priests. They're sinful creatures.
They're anti-Tabithas.
Anti-Tabithas?
Well, it's like a female Uncle Tom.
Oh, I did not know this reference.
Well, no, I just...
Did anybody else?
I just made it up.
It's terrible.
Well, I thought it wasn't bad. You know, I'm trying here. Comedy is an experiment. Sometimes it works and sometimes it fails.
Fail. But yeah, I mean, like, look, there are a few passages, there are a few stories in the Bible where women don't either look like whores or harlots, and the ones that are described as saintly are usually the ones that shut up and don't say anything.
Well, what was the deal? Do you know what? Because I seem to remember reading something about Jesus' unofficial disciple, Mary. Was it Mary?
Mary Magdalene, yeah.
Yeah, and they were like, she's a whore. But I'm like, was she a whore? Or did they just make her a whore because they're a bunch of bitter old men?
Well, actually, the whole thing is there are a few Mary Magdalenes because it's a pretty common name. And the idea is that the Mary Magdalene who's the whore and the Mary Magdalene that is supposedly Jesus' wife or a fellow prophet are sometimes indicated to be the same person, or some scholars believe that they're two different people. There is a Gnostic gospel of Mary Magdalene, but like most of the other books that didn't make it into the Bible, it's just basically kept in the Vatican and nobody really talks about it. I mean, there's a gospel of Judas, there's a gospel of, you know, almost... Fucking, I don't know how many books there are in total that are not included, but it's quite a substantial amount. And it's just because many of these books are either too conflicting with the stories of the Bible, or it was viewed by many of the Jesuits at the time as being too fantastical to actually include. Like, there's a story about Jesus turning his father into a goat and levitating wood and all this other kind of stuff. And people don't want that because they wanted to make it look like Jesus was a historical figure rather than a mythological one. So lots of the stories that were passed on and written about are suppressed entirely because it makes them look too much like a character of mythology. Because
they're retarded.
Well, they're like any stories in mythology. They don't make any sense. So if you were to say, well, this person existed, you kind of have to not stack it too much on the side of wackiness. You know, you have to kind of make it seem like it makes sense. It doesn't, but I mean that's not the main point. I mean they mostly succeeded. What percentage of the population believes that Jesus Christ was a historical figure?
Oh, I see fucking episodes on the History Channel and Discovery Channel every week. Make me want to put a nail in my ear and just hammer it right in there.
I find that if you were to just say, if you were to look at the criteria by which you judge, was Jesus Christ a historical figure? I feel honestly that it doesn't make the cut. There's any passages that refer to him. I mean, the passage that everybody always refers to, Josephus, doesn't even refer to him as by name. It refers to just a Christus figure who existed during that time. I'm like, there were thousands of people that claimed to be anointed ones. Surely, how do you even know that it was Jesus? Like, there was an actual one of the contemporaries of Jesus, Apollonius of Tyana. There's more evidence that he existed than Jesus Christ existed, and he was said to have performed the exact same miracles, except for he has one more that Jesus doesn't. He walked through walls, man. That is more impressive.
That's very David Copperfield.
He was the fucking David Copperfield of his time, man.
Did he get to sleep with Christie Brinkley?
Yes, he went back and he went forward in time and slept with her. He was a magician.
Oh, awesome.
Of great power.
I'm going to follow this guy. He's better than Jesus.
All right, let's talk about religion in Canada. I actually was very surprised when I read this article saying that Canada is apparently post-Christian. They were looking at the rates about which religiosity, specifically Anglicanism, has been on a steady decline since the 1960s. And it's actually, it was very surprising because from 1961 to 2001, the church lost over half of its membership. And since 1991 to 2001, that was 20% of that. So you can see that there is like a trend where, you know, people going away from church is actually progressing faster and faster.
Oh, you could definitely, all of our Canadian listeners, I'm sure, any of you that come from more of a lax family where one person maybe goes to church or you show up for church at Christmas or something like that. I know all the churches that I went to were always practically empty, and the people that were there were like 90 years old. It is thinning out, man.
Well, the religious traditions aren't being passed on to the next generation. I mean, people aren't seeing the point. You know, like if you're not dragging a person there all the time and threatening them with eternal damnation for not showing up, people don't tend to show up for these boring-ass sermons.
Well, do you think that the Anglican Church is going down because of their milquetoast attitude as opposed to the fiery brimstone and crazy Bible-thumping evangelicals of the States?
Well, I have to believe that probably a bigger factor is just it's a matter of size, right? Let's say you have a community where there are 600 religious people. And everyone else around them is not religious. Well, the influence of the non-religious or the secularist is going to be pretty huge on the people that are religious. But now let's reverse that. Let's say there's 600 secularists but thousands of evangelicals in one area. There's just so many people believing the same thing that you're just not likely to abandon the religion because there's just so much at stake from suddenly declaring, hey, I'm no longer religious. There was an article that I linked to a few days ago about this person who was a Jehovah's Witness, and she was talking about her experience of leaving the church and what have you, and it sounded like a really painful, emotional story. You know, she no longer talks to her family. She had to divorce her husband. You know, she was ostracized. She had to watch her sister before her be completely and utterly rejected and shamed and stuff like that. I mean, the Jehovah's Witness movement. They'll say, well, you know, we don't force anyone to stay and everybody's free to leave. But we all know that emotional manipulation is how you get someone to stay. You know, if you're just like, well, if you leave, you're no longer allowed to talk to your friends and family. I mean, think about what that means to people.
And I've actually had friends back in high school. I knew three Jehovah's Witnesses. My girlfriend's cousin was a Jehovah's Witness, and he ended up having to move in with a friend because his mom kicked him out of the house because he left the faith, and he was completely ostracized, and they're still split. And there was another girl that I knew who ended up in the same situation because her family basically threw her out because she rejected being a Jehovah's Witness. It's like, and a lot of people the same thing. Like, I've talked to a lot of people, and anyone that knows a bunch, they know at least one where something funky like that has happened.
I think it's sad that we've stopped calling these kinds of religions cults. You know, I think that any time you have a religion where you force people to, you know, to hide their own objections to the faith, or if as soon as you proclaim that you no longer believe that everyone else is supposed to ostracize you, I mean, this is what a cult does. This is a cultish type of behavior. I mean, the woman that I was talking about, the one that was leaving her faith, she wanted to become a nurse, and she had already, you know, she was going to school and that kind of stuff. And the church elders didn't want her to become a nurse because, according to them, in the new paradise that Jesus was going to create, there would be no sickness and therefore no need for nurses. So the church controls your very actions because they're like, well, the end of the world is coming any day now, and we're preparing for that rather than, you know, doing anything with their fucking lives.
I'm talking about sticking your noses into somebody's lives.
Well, that's all they do. You cannot make any decisions without the elders. I mean, her marriage to her husband was entirely arranged by the church. She didn't love this man. They had barely even spent any time together before they actually were married. And when she was married to him, she was miserable because all the guy would do was defer to church elders when making any decisions about his life. And you know what? To some degree, I think that that is something that is appealing to some individuals. You know, I've begun to wonder, is the appeal of religion the fact that sometimes we feel paralyzed by choice as human beings? You know, you ever go to a grocery store and there's like 20,000 different brands of bread and you're like, what the fuck kind of bread should I take?
The softest and most delicious.
Well, at least you know how to make your choice. Mm-hmm. You have criteria for choice. But a lot of times people don't, you know, like as soon as they see too many choices, they feel paralyzed by it. And in a way, a religion limits your choice. It makes choices for you. You don't have as much choice. So, you know, if you're a Jew, you have to marry another Jew. You know, that limits the amount of choice that you're going to have in terms of partner. And they may even choose your wife for you in certain religions. And some people find that appealing because they would rather have choices made for them rather than suffer the anxiety and fear of making the wrong choice. And that's kind of that's the thing about no longer having a religious affiliation. Now, when choice isn't thrusted upon you, you have kind of an anxiety about whether or not you're making the right ones. And some people really don't like that anxiety. They would rather somebody else make the decision with the assurance that every decision that they're make is paving their way into a magical skyland.
It's very nice to know when everything that you're doing is right because the church said so.
Yeah, exactly. Was I doing the right thing? Oh, of course, of course. Was it right for me to reject my family or member who decided that they weren't going to believe anymore? Oh, yes, yes, you're doing the right thing. Never talk to these people again. They are now cursed by God. So how do you feel about what was their estimate? By 2061, there would be only one Anglican left in this country. This is what they're saying.
Yeah, they did that 50-year. They did a 50-year estimate, and they figured if they keep losing, what was the number, 13,000 Anglicans a year, there would be no one left by 2061.
Yeah, they were saying that the only reason why the Roman Catholic Church is holding steady in terms of its membership is because of immigration. But even then, I mean, second or third generation Canadians born to immigrant parents, they're not keeping the religion either. So it may take longer for religion to disappear in this country just because we're importing religious people.
And plus, I mean, it's... it's quote-unquote a good thing for atheists like us to see this and see these statistics and think, well, that's good. But at the same time, the article was quick to mention that even though these people are saying that they're no longer Anglicans, a lot of them still identify themselves as quote-unquote Christian. They just don't go to church or
I think that's just bullshit. I mean, it's the same way that you identified yourself as Protestant because that was the tradition that you had come from. But it doesn't mean anything to you. Like, it doesn't mean anything to most people. They just want a way to identify themselves. But tell you what, if you identify yourself as a Christian but don't believe in any of the Christian faith, what the hell does that make you? You know, a Christian atheist?
I don't know what you're supposed to be.
It's like a secular Jew. Like, they embrace the culture, but they don't believe in any of the religion.
I think to a degree it might make you more dangerous because it means you're less in the know about everything and more likely just to follow along because of your label.
I mean, we see this in the States.
How else can you explain all these retards who have no idea what they're talking about, no idea what's in the Bible, no idea about anything really regarding religious studies, don't know any of the actual stories in there or anything else. Like, you have a better understanding of religion, of their own religion than they do. But these are the same people who are the fucking mega freaks that are causing all this problem, all these problems.
I just think that there's the contingent of the population that ever makes any decision, spiritual or otherwise, I think is roughly about 10 to 15% of the population. Everybody else just follows. So you either have one group that's basically led by a few crazies and everybody else is just deferring to their opinions, or you have other people that are trying to lead the cause for greater understanding, humanism, and so on and so forth. And yeah, even on that side of the spectrum, there are still people that just follow and don't really think about it. Because I think when it comes to even religious issues, it's not an important thing to most. I mean, how many agnostics are out there that just consider the whole matter of picking a side, either atheism or religion, even offensive? I mean, I can't tell you how many times I still get emails saying, oh, you know, you're arrogant to pretend that you know everything. I think agnosticism is a better position, yada, 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 you know, calling me, like, saying that I have a feeling of superiority, even though apparently their position is better than mine. I'm like, is that not a position of superiority as well? But anyways, I mean, it's still so it's not important to everybody, but you have to pick a side in most cases. So if you're religious and it really doesn't matter to you, you still have to kind of defer to the opinions of other people. And you may not really go out of your way to support what they do or say, but you're still part of that support network. And that's the real problem. The individuals that can't make up their minds, that have absolutely no integrity. I feel better about, you know, fundamentalists, because at least they've given it some thought. Now, they're wrong and crazy, but it's just an example of what happens when you think about it. You have to go either way. Either you believe that the Bible is the inherent word of God in all of its forms, or, like us, you think it's just a fucking...
About as true as Hercules
and Norse mythology and all this other kind of stuff, because you've seen and you've studied in the mythology of other cultures. And why would you believe that the mythology of Christian is any different than the mythology of Zoroastrianism or the mythology of ancient Persia? You know, there is no difference. And it's even the same stories over and over again, just rebranded. I mean, the messianic figure is just... It's older than civilization itself. You just hear the same stories over and over and over again. And, of course, we recognize it as such, but not everybody does. And, you know, with that note, I would like to point out, just relatively quickly, if there are any agnostics that are listening to the show and think that your position is superior, I just want you to consider this. Having a position that it is equally likely that there is no God or is a God is not itself a position. It is basically just deferring responsibility of coming up with an answer to that question. Because you might say, well, it is still possible. And as an atheist, I don't deny that the supernatural may still exist. But I have to look at the evidence. I have to look at there is zero evidence to suggest that there is any supernatural powers out there whatsoever. Prayer doesn't work. Everything that we understand about the universe so far has a materialistic explanation. There has been no evidence of any kind of supernatural powers like ESP, telekinesis, pyrokinesis, or whatever. All of these are just basically bunk. They've been perpetually and utterly disproven. Now, what am I to believe? Am I going to still sit on the fence and think to myself, well, you never know, and therefore I won't make up my mind? It's ridiculous.
Yep, look to the flying spaghetti monster for the answer, folks.
Yep, and you know what? Like, I was reading a book from Kenneth Miller, who's I was already mentioning this. It's he was one of the guys that testified in the Dover trials, but he's a religious man. And his book tries to argue that evolution is proof of God. Now, I'm not going to go into this until I finish the book. But one of the points that he brings up, and I think this is actually a pretty good point, is that people do a, you know, the theory of evolution as it exists, and this is a theory with a capital T, could still be wrong. And every scientist admits to this, but they would say that any theory that would replace it would have to be superior. And I think it's kind of generally the same way with atheism or with what we believe. The theory so far is that there does not seem to be a God. It does not seem to be a necessary contingent to life in the universe. And it's a failed, God is a failed hypothesis. Now, if you can come up with another explanation that is superior to it, I'm all ears. Just like I'm all ears to a theory that's more powerful than evolution to explain biological life. But it doesn't mean that until then, because there might be a potential theory, I'm going to stop believing in evolution. Okay? The theory is solid. It is sound. All the evidence points to it. Why would I not believe it? This is, if you can't believe that, well, what the fuck can you believe? If you're going to take the attitude that you can't believe anything unless it's proven 100%, well, I'm sorry, you're not going to be able to believe in anything. Because even the best science doesn't pretend to know absolutely everything. But you still have to make a choice about your belief. And that's what we do as atheists. We're like, well, we saw the evidence. It seems to suggest no God. That's the position I take. And if you think that that is really being arrogant, then I think you're a fool. By that same token, it is arrogant to believe in gravity. It is arrogant to believe in evolution. I don't particularly find that that is arrogant. I just think that that is being truthful to the evidence, and I think it's showing a certain amount of intellectual integrity. That's what I consider atheism, intellectual integrity. What do you think?
I think that anybody that thinks that atheists are arrogant, I say that the real arrogance is imagining that out of all the billions of species, we're the important one, and of course, out of all of the planets in the galaxy, ours is where it's at. I mean, come on. When you understand the scope of the universe and
the scope of time and the scope of
exactly.
All the different species, to think that one naked ape is the one that was designed with, you know, like
the chosen
God,
ape.
The chosen ape. That's just sad. That's just sad. I'm sure if it was a dolphin species that would have, you know, evolved, you know, the cognitive abilities that we have, they would think that God was a dolphin. I mean, let's not be silly here. Of course. In the beginning, man created God. All right, you know what? I think that we'll wrap up the show. We'll catch everybody on Tuesday for the regular show. I'd like to thank everybody that's a patron. And in 2 months, actually, this is when we reach our one-year mark. So some of you will have to be renewing your membership. I'm going to send you a nice, courteous email asking you to continue to contribute because you guys make this possible.
Yep.
And we like doing what we do, so please allow us to continue to do that with your generosity and your patronage. All right, with that, my name is Jacob Forte.
I'm Ryan Harkness.
Have a good Atheist Day, everybody.